Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, we're glad you're here. Ken Crozen is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Kenneth is a friend of ours, a member of our Brain Trust. And as I told you earlier in the hour, I was telling you about Kenneth's work and some of the things that he had done and some of the things he'd published, some of the ideas he'd published. I was telling you about some of those things and writing about them before I knew Ken, and now that we've gotten to know him a little bit, we ran him down, we hunted him down and found him and encouraged him to be on our show, and now he's become a member of our Brain Trust, and he joins us from time to time to talk to us about intellectual property, a very, very, not just an important part of your 21st century future, but an essential fundamental of your 21st century future. Kenneth Crozen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you. And by the way, Ken, before we get started, get too far into our conversation, I'd like to point out that on this day in 1871, Henry Bradley patented oleomargarine. How about that?
Well, that doesn't surprise me. You know, the patent system in this country goes back to the founding fathers. It's right in the Constitution of the United States. Patents, copyrights are right there. So our founding fathers recognized the importance of innovation right from the very beginning.
Innovation and also not only innovation, but the right to own those innovations.
That's correct.
To own them and to be able to leverage them. So oleomargarine, now I got more here, Ken. 1871, the oleomargarine was patented. 1888, the drinking straw was patented by Marvin Stone. How about that? The drinking straw. And also 1957, the Hamilton Watch Company introduced the first electric watch. Now, what we don't know, though, and this leads us to part of what you want to talk to us about, what I don't know is, was this their invention or was this an invention that they licensed?
Well, that's an interesting question, Jim, and it sort of leads me to something I'd like to talk a little bit about today, and that is what has happened in the world of the relationships between licensees and licensors of patented technology. The last couple of times I've been on your show, I mentioned some big developments at the Supreme Court this past year. There was another one that I haven't talked about that related to that relationship between licensees and licensors.
Now, remind the audience which one is which. The inventor is the licensee or the licensor? Which one?
The inventor is the licensor. He is the person that owns the technology.
She.
And so he gets the or after his name. And
there
the
you
licensee
go.
Is the person who takes rights under the licensor's patents.
Right, just like lessor and lessee. Same kind of philosophy. So the company, for example, now Hamilton Watch Company may have been the licensee. We don't know. It doesn't say here that whether they own the patent, but it would be very logical for them to have found somebody who created the electric watch and paid them a licensing fee to become the licensee of that property.
Very possible. It's possible that it may have been a Hamilton Watch employee that came up with the invention and assigned his or her rights to the company, or it's possible that Hamilton learned about the technology from a third party and licensed it or alternatively purchased it.
Because if I'm not mistaken, Ken, the quartz movement was invented by, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it invented by the Swiss, and it just didn't fit their paradigm for watches, and they let somebody else buy it from them? I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jim. And my recollection is that, you know, they were so plugged into the mechanical watch movements and had so
right.
much capital invested in making those movements that it was very difficult for them to make the change over to the quartz watch movement.
As Joel Barker says, it didn't fit their paradigm of watches, but this is the big thing, and this issue that we're talking about right now, the licensee licensor thing, is a very important one for small businesses, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that
let me stop you for a second. I'm sorry. We're coming up on a break here. We got to take a quick one, folks. We'll be right back. I'm gonna let Ken comment on that. You don't want to lose. You don't want to miss this, folks. We're talking about one of the most important fundamentals of your 21st century future: intellectual property. What do you do with it when you have it? Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the man who can't tell time. You'd think after all these years I'd be able to do that, wouldn't you? Welcome back. It's good to continue to be with you. We got our good friend Kenneth Crozen with us, by the way, folks. He is with the law firm of Foley and Lardner out of Washington, D.C., an outstanding law firm. He is a patent attorney, an intellectual property attorney. Do you still say patent attorney, Kenneth?
Well, I do sometimes, but the common lingo these days is intellectual property attorney, which kind of covers the whole scope of intellectual property, patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets.
The evolution of the terms is moving toward IP, isn't it? Away from patent and towards the intellectual property thing.
It is.
So we're talking about, folks, the fact that you don't have to invent things to be able to leverage them. Or if you've invented something, you don't have to be the one to take it to market. You can license it to somebody else, let them take it to market, and you can go back to inventing something else. Kenneth, talk to us about that.
Okay, Jim, what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit before the break now is, and now after the break is what I call the non-invented here syndrome, and that's a dangerous thing that affects both large companies and small companies alike. And the idea is that you sometimes feel that the only things that you should be taking to market or developing are your own inventions, because you understand them the best, mm-hmm. and you came up with the idea, and there's this notion of proprietorship and so forth. And you need to get away from that mindset, because there are lots of good ideas out there being developed by other people, and those other folks may be in a position where they want to license to your company, or alternatively, you may not be in a position to take to market your invention. So the ability to license out your inventions is an important concept. So you have to allow your mind to be open to the notion that you don't have to be the person that actually invents the technology. It's just out there in the world, and however you get it lawfully, of course, is the way to go.
Well, to me it seems, Ken, that the mindset should be to leverage intellectual property. And if you're thinking, I want to leverage intellectual property more and muscles less, you know, if I want to automate more and have fewer human steps in a process, if that's the mindset, and I think that it should be, then you say, okay, where do I find this information? Where do I find this property? These levers? Where do I find them? Do I invent them? Do I buy them? Do I license them? How do I get them? And whatever is the quickest way to get them, that's the direction you should go in.
Absolutely. And of course, today, you know, there's a lot of information available to people from computer sources. You know, you can Google just about anything now. But there are also consultants available who you can work with if you're interested in going down a particular path. These people can be found, and They can help you in not only developing your technology, but finding other sources of technology that you can obtain either through purchase or license. Yesterday, I was on the phone with three of these different companies that basically provide expert consulting services, and they cover a wide range of different technologies, and all you got to do is call them up on the phone and work with them, and they will help you get what you need.
So they'll find some esoteric capability that you need somewhere, or just go out and find it for you?
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely.
And how would we find somebody like that? What would we need to do? Is there a term for that kind of a consultant?
Well, I would call them generally expert consultants. I suppose if you put them in Google, you'll find a number of companies that come up like that. I've been collecting names for many years now, so I know.
You know where they live and what their kids' names are. But if I were right. If I were doing it, I would say intellectual property search firms or consulting for intellectual property consulting firms, that kind of thing.
That's one way to try it, or expert, technical experts, anything like that should be enough to get you started on the search. And once you start down that road, you ought to be able to come up with some good sources of information. And these kinds of people can really help you find what you're looking for to, like I say, either develop your technology or find others who have already developed the technology that you can buy or license.
Well, and they may even know somebody who's got one piece of the puzzle, somebody else who's got another piece of the puzzle, and it never was a full puzzle until they talked to you and you said, "Hey, I need something that can do this," and they're the receptacle of all this information, and they could say, "You know, what if we put these two things together? I think that would create what you need."
That's exactly right. And there are people out there who really know how to put people together. I've dealt with some of these folks, and it's really part of the intellectual asset management process is finding those kinds of people that can help match technology and market needs.
Well, and these are these kinds of capabilities, technologies, intellectual property that's available today, Ken, is what's helping small business owners really accomplish some big things in the marketplace, isn't it?
Absolutely. IP, they say that 80% of all valuation is intellectual property and only 20% is bricks and mortar.
Exactly. When we come back, I'm going to ask Ken to tell us about how much he thinks intellectual property is contributing to the strength of our economy these days and the ability of our economy to withstand a downturn and to turn it around and get us back on track. We'll do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with me today. Kenneth Crozen is our guest. Ken, give us your website, please, there at Foley.
It is the website. Okay, yeah. www.foley, F-O-L-E-Y, .com.
All right, and they can find out more about your firm, what you guys do. And if somebody wanted to email you, you want to give them your email address?
Okay, that's what I started. That's KKROSIN at Foley.com.
All right, so check that out, folks. And Kenneth is a guy that first introduced me to the concept of the evolution of the different kinds of assets, the evolution of asset migration from hard assets to intellectual assets. He's the guy who wrote the piece that I just decided was a watershed work. And Ken, over the last several years, as you know, I mean, my first recession that I remember was 1969, and ever since then, we went through some rough ones in the 70s, we went through some rough ones in the early 80s, but ever since then, things have gotten easier. When we've had a correction, when we've had an adjustment, even a recession, like the one of the early 90s, the one of the early part of this decade, even those recessions were almost non-events. And I believe, Ken, it's because of the growth and the deployment of intellectual property more than anything else, being able to manage information and money and assets much more quickly. I believe more than anything else that has helped us to get ourselves to not get ourselves into a deep downturn and to get ourselves out of whatever we were in. What do you think?
Well, I think there's some real merit to what you're saying, Jim. You know, intellectual property has provided the backbone for the information revolution, and I think what your point is that information has really been available much more readily and much more quickly. It's flowed and allowed people to make adjustments much more quickly. And that's really been, I think, a large part of avoiding these recessionary cycles.
Well, so much of what was being built up in the marketplace for so long was just kind of a mystery. I mean, I remember one of the reasons why we were in such a tough recession in the 70s and the early 80s was because we had such great inventory buildups. Well, somebody wasn't getting to the factory and saying, hey, things are slowing down. You need to stop making stuff. But now with just-in-time inventory practices and the technology to back all that up, we now are able to communicate when a faucet closes off a little bit out at the consumer level. We're able to get that information back to the raw materials people in the factory that day.
That's right, and that's really part of the information flow I was just talking about, and you were mentioning, and that was really facilitated by the new technologies.
And Ken, I believe that one of the reasons why that we're not having these horrible downturns and steep recessions is in large part because small business owners now have access to that kind of intellectual power. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think anybody from small to large can go on the computer and get the same information as anybody else. It's really something that's, I think, leveled the playing field for a lot of people. I mean, it's amazing how somebody small can, develop great ideas and get them to market just as quickly as somebody big.
Well, and my job, what I feel my job is, Ken, and you're helping me with this, is to show small business owners, not only can you buy this kind of stuff off the shelf, not only is it available to license, as you and I talked earlier, but we're creating our own intellectual property, and it's important that we recognize that as we're doing it so we can value this asset that we have.
That's right, and you know my side of the game is to help people protect that intellectual property and to create value out of that intellectual property, and it's been something that I've seen just explode, really, in the last, I've been in this business a long time. In the last 10 years, I would say, things have just exploded.
But haven't you also said recently that in the last year or so, it's even gotten heated up even more, and I think that's good news.
It has. It's an accelerating trend, and I think it's good for the country. It's good for the economy, and like you say, it really does help stabilize things, prevent.
And it's good for the Croson household too, isn't it?
Well, it absolutely is, Jim.
Hey, Ken, give us that website one more time.
www.foley.com.
Hey, Ken, thanks for being here. Good job today, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, Jim, good talking to you.
Talk to you later. Kenneth Croson, ladies and gentlemen, he's one of the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.